Hey everybody, it's Lloyd Spence, and I am excited about where we are headed because we're getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs, and man, you can tell things are heating up. So now I got to get in position. I got to get you in position to get you over to betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your, wait for it, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So get on over there to betonline.ag, betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. Come on, man. Tell them the Noisemaker sent you. Man, I wish I could get back to fishing on the weekends, back like I did back in the day when I was a wee lad. But I can't, man. The time is... Okay, let me just be honest. I can't find the right stuff. I don't know the right baits to go get for Texas. But I'm glad our new sponsor, Monster Bass, is the fun and affordable way to get the best new baits from the fishing industry's top brands delivered to my doorstep each month. Premium subscription fishing company that handpicks the best baits based on where I live and where you live and fish. No more guessing on which baits are going to work. Just leave it to the pros at Monster Bass. They know what to do. Basically, it's like having your own personal fishing guide. It's changing the way bass fishermen shop for baits. They're quickly becoming the number one fishing brand of anglers everywhere. They got the best baits from the best brands, and you're covered by the industry's best customer service. So, if you want to catch a bigger bass this season, head on over to monstersbass.com and use the code ACC10 to get $10 off your first box. That's monstersbass.com. Use the code ACC10 to get $10 off your first box. Sign up for Monster Bass now. Tell them your boy Lloyd Spence sent you.
Popcorn World.
Tonight, this Monday night, for another edition of Believe in the ACC. That is our Hall of Famer of Fern Creek, Kendrick Big Daddy Haskins. That is the cool cat known as our Heisman Trophy winner, Charlie Ward. And I am merely your master of ceremonies, Mr. Lloyd Spence. That's all I do. I just keep the train on the track. That's all I do.
You feeling better?
The coolest man on the planet.
I'm the what now?
What'd you say? Introduce Charlie as the coolest man on the planet.
The coolest man on the planet. Look how he just flipped that little drink up there, like, you know, I ain't got a care in the world. That's Charlie Ward. That's AK.
Right. Yeah, he's out of the basketball season. He's not worried about it right now.
He ain't worried about just chilling. Well, that's not really true. He is worried about one thing. Shot clocks. Get that man a shot clock.
Get him his shot clock. Okay. I'm with him. We're a united front.
We are united in that. Get that man a shot clock immediately.
It's not me. It's for the kids.
Right, right. Because Charlie loves little kids.
It's for the kids. As my man Andy Mendio says in his song.
Charlie loves the kids.
Get him a shot clock. Get the kids a shot clock.
There you go. So they can have some fun.
There you go. My brothers, how y'all feeling tonight? Everybody good?
We good.
Yeah. Doing well.
All right. Well, we got a good one tonight. We're going to jump right into it. A lot of stuff is happening in the NCAA. And I got to ask the question right off the top. Do you like the new NCAA? A lot of people have mixed feelings about the new NCAA. But
what is the new NCAA?
But it's new. The NCAA has free agency. It's paying people. You can leave one school and go to another if you want to. It's really different than what we've seen or accustomed to.
That is true. I put it out there like that.
Yeah. What do y'all think? First of all, let's just do an open-ended question of, do we like the new NCAA as it currently is being altered?
I like some aspects of it, but there needs to be some tweaks. There needs to be some guardrails, some something for 18, 19-year-old kids. I know people always say let them live and all of those types of things, which is great. However, sometimes you don't have to make mistakes when people are trying to help you before you can make mistakes. So,
yeah. Right.
I mean, we can sit here and say, let them live, let them make their own mistakes. But if you see things are happening, yes, they're going to fail. But if you see things are happening down the road, you're just not going to say, keep going. I see that detour down there. Keep going 80 miles per hour. I know it's a detour at the end, but I'm not going to let you know about it.
Yeah.
I want you to run into that, bump your head. Maybe you may stumble, may get killed, or whatever the case may be, but I'm not going to let you know that there's a detour at the end of the street.
Mm.
So I'm just going to let you go. That's the mindset that some people have. And I'm like, if you know there's a detour at the end, let the people know. Let them know. Then they can make their decision whether they want to go 80 miles per hour into that detour or proceed with caution.
I feel like a lot of what we're seeing right now is a lot of fear coming from the NCAA to a lot of the underbelly conversations that they've heard. They may break away and start their own Power Five thing. They may do this. If they leave, they're going to pay the players. So if you hear enough of that over the last few years, now it's kind of like, well, we got to do something to protect what we have. And so they're just throwing – it feels like people are throwing stuff to the wall to see if it sticks. Right. We'll give you the – what if we – it's like you come to the table and say, what will it take for us to get you to stay? How about an NIL? How about a transfer portal? How about, and you're like, okay. And so it's like Charlie said, yeah, some of these things are what they've been fighting for all along. But the other side of it is you're just throwing it to them without any clear path to understanding or measures of how to make it truly work, or you're seeing the whole totality of the picture. Like, there's some elements of all of this stuff there's a lot of ambiguity that makes you go, well, how's this going to work? And how's that going to work? And how this could go really bad. And man, could this be tampering? And I mean, it's a lot of that all throughout all of this. So, I mean, that's my fear of what it is. It just feels very knee-jerk. A lot of this feels very knee-jerk. What are your thoughts, Kendrick?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's a byproduct of them, of a knee-jerk thing of where they don't know really what direction to go into. They know they have to change.
Right.
But like some of the changes they need to make, they're not going to make. But I feel like it's a lot of the changes. And it's just, like you said, I mean, that's the best term for it. It's just knee-jerk because of these other leagues. The funny thing is, it's the other leagues that are popping up are basketball. Football is what makes all the money in the NCAA, but right, it's the basketball right. leagues that's got them running scared because of the NCAA tournament, I guess. But, I mean, the NCAA tournament is always going to be the NCAA tournament. But that's the funny thing about it is, like, there's no pop-up football leagues popping around.
As of yet, and
honestly, it could be the NCAA getting out in front of that. But in order for a pop-up, don't go to college football league to develop, that's going to cost a ton of money.
Yeah,
so, a ton. Well, the difference is the longevity.
Right.
Like, you have like the NFL set guidelines and rules around how many years you had to be in, you know, college before you can enter the draft. And so they've kind of set those parameters to where they haven't budged on those. Until that happens, you probably won't see pop-up leagues for 3 years because it's right. hard to sustain that. But you can sustain a one-year type of deal basketball-wise when you're talking about 15 kids, potentially 30 kids, or how many of the kids, a small group, for like a year, you can. That's easy to maintain because you're going to be getting a new group pretty much each and every year.
Right.
And so it's a lot easier to maintain 1 year as opposed to 3 years from a football standpoint. You got to have at least 22, but you got to have more than that to be able to fill a football team. So I don't see that happening until the NFL decided they want to go 1 year or move it down to 2 years being in college or whatever the case may be, since guys are starting to fill out. But even with that, it's still a hit or miss deal. I mean, how many guys are making it and staying, you know, long enough to get pension?
Yeah.
Right, right.
I think it kind of goes both. There's two parts to that, Charlie. I think you make a great point. Either the NCAA is going to have to move on that 3-year deal, or they will change the language to 3 years or 2 years post high school. Meaning that if you went into anything and played post high school, then you could qualify for the NFL. So that would leave way to a semi-professional circumstance that, or a post-high school circumstance that is connected, that's not like kind of like a feeder league kind of thing, or like a AAA situation or 2A situation, that like in baseball, if they would go to some model that looked like that. But then you got to ask yourself, as a high school football player, do you want to go into that type of circumstance where the propensity of injury probably magnifies because you're playing at a much higher level? You're playing, quote unquote, the elite players, and the ask is greater because you get to train all day. That's the trade-off. You get to train all day. It's a different, you know what I'm saying? You're working on your craft, but at the same time, that's a $50,000 situation at best, or $30,000 situation at best. Whereas 3 years in Alabama could prepare you to go number one in the draft.
That's why I think it's so weird that the NCAA is knee-jerking so much on
all of
this.
That's what I think as well.
Because football is the moneymaker, and football is not the one that's threatening it. It's basketball is the one that has these other, you know, leagues developing for kids coming out of high school. And, like, while that does affect the NCAA a little bit, it doesn't affect it near as much as football would. And so, it's so weird to see the knee jerk to everything.
And I would argue, to Charlie's point as well, and to your point, Kendrick, I've yet to see very many high school ready pro football players.
Because you haven't.
I was going to say, the only one I can remember that might have been close was the young man that played at Louisville. I forget his name, but you know what I'm talking about. He was a man child coming out of
Michael Bush.
No, not Bush, but he was a defensive lineman, if I remember correctly, like an end, defensive end.
Well, Amobi Okoye.
Yes, he was good. I mean,
I think he still might stand as the youngest player ever drafted in the NFL draft.
Right.
But even then, he still came in and played 2 or 3 years at Louisville before he went to – I think he played 2 years at Louisville before he went to the NFL.
Right.
And so, have a player here and there. You know, Maurice Clarett challenged it. But, like, with football – it's a totally different beast because it's so much a more physical sport than basketball is. But I think part of the NCAA's thing is because they're getting so much heat about all the money they make in the NCAA tournament. And like these players get nothing. They get a couple watches, some Xboxes and about it.
Right.
So they're reacting to that.
They get nothing from the standpoint of a chick.
Right. They get gifts, but like, I mean, that's it.
They got a place. They got a place to live. They got to get there. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. Now they've added bringing the parents and family out to the games. Right. Those are some things that they've added to the mix. And I'm not saying that kids don't deserve, you know, a piece of the pie. I'm just saying that they've worked to try to make some concessions or listen to what they needed, because it is an expense for parents to be able to come to games. And so they've made an exception to being able to get the parents or the family out to the Final Four games.
But Charlie, what I would look at with that is this. Why did it take the pressure of all of these changes to do what was so obviously necessary to do a long time ago? Like, listen, Charlie, when you played in the national championship game, somebody should have been paying for your parents to be there, to see their child playing in the national championship game. That's a no-brainer. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't understand why it took the pressure of all of this off-site stuff to make them do what they should have done all along.
I wonder about that all the time, about just everything. I mean, you can just go across the board. It's not just the NCAA. I mean, you can go across the board. A lot of people get forced to do things that you think, man, you should just do that just because.
Right. It's this hard. Yeah.
You know, that's just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't normally happen. People have to be coerced or forced into certain things because someone brought it up and it wasn't right or whatever. I'm just saying that, and it's just all these things. A lot of times you sit back and you wonder, like, why? But sometimes you see it, you talk about it, but you just can't find a way to make it happen. And I think that's what's happening with the NCAA with this transfer deal and the NIL was, you know, they just couldn't find a good system within what they were doing to actually make it work until people started going, and talking about it more. And then the law people got into it. And I want to get into something to get into that a little bit as well about this government. Do the government want to run all the colleges? That is my question, because they're making laws now.
Yeah. Grandstanding, like we talked about.
The laws are different. And now you have these different states and the different colleges going according to their law.
Well, let's jump into that.
I want to know if they want to get into the NCAA business.
Well, let's jump into
that
because that's a part of this narrative that we're talking about with this new NCAA. Because we're headed toward federal regulations for a lot of the things that's going on in the NCAA. Is the NCAA's autonomy coming to an end because of things like the Georgia Bill 8617, which says that those young men will be able, and California's bill, I didn't even include theirs, but they have one as well, where you can make money off your name, image, and likeness. And so, but now the one about Georgia is the one that I think is a little, I'm trying to understand it, because that 75% of it will be dictated by the school. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. How does that work? Because the school can split up 75% of your monies, or how does that, I don't understand that part.
So I was listening to Bobani Jones actually earlier today, and he was talking about this. And he was, so 75%, that 75% goes to funding the other program.
Yeah. You're right.
Which is the point that he was making, and was the point and I was talking about in our text. End of the day, to be honest, it goes back to the sports that the black kids play. Basketball and football is the ones that's making the money, and they're the ones that's most likely going to get those endorsements or whatever, and their money is going back to pay for the sports that the white kids play: field hockey, lacrosse, soccer. I mean, yeah, we got some of us in there. I mean, track is predominantly us, but that's kind of what is the deal. And he pointed that out. And like, while they will never, explicitly say that, if you really break it down, where's that other 75% going? They're throwing a couple shekels at the offensive lineman and, stuff like that. But
let me start with the first part of, why are you taking 75% of my money?
Well, the deal is, they don't have to take 75%. The school, basically the school can tax them that 75%, but the school doesn't have to take that 75%.
But now, come on. Do you think they're not going to tax them 75%?
Not if they want recruits.
I wouldn't do it. Like if I'm
you have the choice between going to Georgia or somewhere else that doesn't do that.
Georgia Tech, I want no parts of that.
Right.
No, I mean, I don't know about that part, but I'm just saying I'm going to go back to the 75% taxing and all of that. I did see in the bill there were some other things about education, which
financial literacy. I like that.
I'm totally on board with that. I think that there should be a trust fund associated with each person's name that is able to receive any kind of benefits and rewards off of their name, image, and likeness that the school brings them. So, if the school has a deal with a sponsor, whatever that sponsor is and whatever sport it may be, and they're willing to do some form of a opportunity, give a kid an opportunity to earn some resources from their name, image, and likeness, whatever that may be, then the school should be able to put some of that money into a trust fund that goes directly to that kid at some point in time. I don't think they should get it all at that time, but there should be a trust. And all that money should go into one pot, because now I can invest that money to provide interest, of course. But the kid's going to get his or her share at the due time.
So,
go ahead.
And I do agree that the school should get some of the money, because at the end of the day, the school is, I mean, you're not getting whatever car, saying car dealership. Just throw an example. You're not getting a car dealership commercial if you're not going to a school in that area. So I agree that the school should get a cut.
Right, 75%. Not 75%. That's not 75%. But let me also throw this out, because this is something I thought about. If I have the right to make money off of my name, image, and likeness, should I not also have the right to who negotiates those numbers for me? Because if I'm Joe Burrow, or if I'm Patrick Mahomes, or if I'm Justin Fields, I'm going to command way more than Rashard Slater is.
See, that's
I don't want you to negotiate. I don't want the school negotiating one thing for all of us. I want to be able to control my own path to endorsement finances. I like the trust part of it, but I still want to be able to make as much money as my college image, name, and likeness will allow me to make.
And that is where the messy, to me, this is where it gets really, really messy, because now you're dealing with, let's say, 85 kids on scholarship, and now you decide, or a couple of people, let's say 15 to 20 of the players decide they want to go and negotiate their own deal. Mm-hmm. Who's going to do it? They can't do it, because unless, I mean, I'm not saying for them, they can get advised by someone to be able to go in, but now you're talking about 20 different advisors. And who, I mean, I understand where this is going and trying to go. It's definitely going to a bigger version of the NFL, the NBA, mm-hmm. professional sports. It's just a bigger version, because they have limited groups, you know, like there's only 32 teams. There's only 30 teams. And you know, how many teams in the NHL? You know, it's a limited group, but now you're talking about everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. Division One, Division Two. I mean, everyone, and then you're really talking about, you know, how does a Division Two school make it? I mean, not make it, but how do they hold up on the end of the colleges overseeing and those types of things? I don't know how they do it, you know, without the manpower, and so. I just think there's some things, there needs to be some guardrails. But yes, you talk about the top-notch players. They're going to command top dollars. That's just the way it is.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we get so caught up into the top players that we forget about the paid-in internships. That's just important as, you know, signing an autograph. I'm mm-hmm. not saying that's important, but that is a great way. Also, now they can't do that. But now with the name, image, and likeness, I can go and get a paid internship for something I'm going to do later on in life.
Right.
Here's a question I've always had, and I've never really asked, and Charlie, I'll ask you, because you would probably have more insight on it than just about anybody, is because like, it drives me crazy, because it ever made me think about it was over the weekend. I was walking around and I saw someone wearing a Lamar Jackson U of L t-shirt.
That was one
and
of
like, I know he can't get that money while he's in school, but after he's left, and I'm sure there was some number 17s walking around Tallahassee after you left. Do you get a cut of that after you've gotten out of, after you're done?
And let me,
I don't know.
I want to build on that question, and then, Charlie, I want you to answer all of this, because that's part of the NIL thing. It's and let me give you guys some info. What the NIL, some of the stuff that they're looking at, and it will include social media, because you can make money off of social media, right?
Right. And
so many thousands of impressions. You get so much money per impression or whatever, just like anything else. The licensing standpoint from these games, and I'm looking at some numbers today, guys. If some of these guys would have been allowed to make money off of their name, image, and likeness, give you the perfect example. Shout out to, what is the name of this website? I'm sorry, athleticdirectoru.com did a phenomenal article tracking and just taking the numbers, the real-time numbers of the two, I guess this would have been the 20. Cole Anthony came out in 2019. I think he came out in 2019. And then Trevor Lawrence in this 2019 as well. So I think this is all.
Yeah, so Cole Anthony would have been 2019.
Yeah, this is all based on 2019. But give you an idea. The most valuable college athlete in 2019 was Cole Anthony. In totality, his endorsements. Yeah, I know it's weird to say that, isn't it? But it was. but in totality, his numbers would have garnered him somewhere in the neighborhood of $476,000. Now, it's $476,000 in a trust coming out of school. That's wonderful. And what would be smart, which I think his father, Greg, would have known to do, he could have taken that $476,000 and put it somewhere where it makes money, you know, whether it's an interest-bearing account or investing, whatever.
Right.
But
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin, whatever he wants to do. But to be able to leave with that as your foundation is a pretty good start off to your future. But and then to have the jersey sales in perpetuity. Because I did hear an athletic director say one time, well, we're not selling the name, we're selling the school, we're selling the come on, man.
If I see a shirt with Louisville on the front with an 8 and 8 and Jackson on the back, I'm not thinking U of L. I'm thinking Lamar Jackson.
If I see a Florida State jersey with a 17 and no name, that's Charlie Ward, man. I'm not crazy. I know what Charlie Ward's number was. So now, Charlie, with all that information, what are your thoughts on the perpetuity aspect of earning on your name while you're there and while you're gone?
Well, while you're there, I think it's good. You know, sometimes we get so caught up into the self generation that we forget about the influence that we can have on a whole lot of people. And so the reason I said that is because, you know, you can earn a lot, and you probably hear me say this a lot, but you can earn a lot to be able to help someone else. It doesn't always have to be about you garnering so much money, because I know in college there are a lot of things that you don't have to pay for. I mean, the things that you'll be earning, the things that you want, you'll be going out to get things that you probably don't need, but it's a want. And so you'll be able to help more people, I do believe, if you start a foundation. Like my man, I'm drawing a blank, the doctor from Florida State.
Oh, Roll, Myron.
Yeah, Myron Roll.
Myron Roll, yeah.
And J.J. Watt. I mean, those guys started foundations in college, and it helped them, you know, give back, you know, while they were in college. And so I think that's something a lot of people may do. There may be some that want to, you know, help their family with whatever the case may be. So I think it may be not just all one cookie cutter type of way that people would use those resources. I just think just opportunity to be able to have that, to be able to choose from
is
something that, you know, I think people are scrambling and wanting to do as well. And yes, I do believe there should be, just like anything else, some royalties for those individuals. Because I know once I got out, I was doing deals with certain companies to be able to take advantage of that, those opportunities. And I think it should be very similar to while you're in school. The schools already have royalty set up anyway, you know, with those companies that are using their name, image, and likeness, as we already know. You know, if you're going to put a FSU logo on your anything, you got to pay royalties off of that. And so I just think that's just another way that potentially you can have someone on behalf of the student athletes and as a whole, along with the NCAA, go in and say each player can earn a certain amount percentage of royalties off of whatever you get, and make it a blanket deal where everybody gets the same amount of royalty, you know, percentage. And you don't have to really, really worry about who's going to get, you know, if he's going to get, you know, 8% or he's going to get 5%, you know, here and there, but everyone can get the same amount of royalty.
And if that's where That's where our roads diverge, Charlie. Because you're saying to me, listening to you now, that Roman Oben should get the same as Lamar Jackson. That Roy Williams.
What do you mean get the same? Because I'm talking about the same percentage.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Okay. I'm saying Vince Young's percentage should be the same as Colt McCoy's.
If Vince Young makes, say, $1 million in sales, and the percentage is going, his amount bringing in is going to be higher than Colt McCoy making $500,000. Is that right? My numbers.
No, you're right. You're right in that way. If you say it that way,
that's what.
But if they sell the same $500,000, I don't know. That's a tricky one for me.
If they're selling the same amount, what's the difference between the two?
That's true. That's my question. That was my question. Is how is it now? Let's just say, like, all of a sudden. Today, we go back to the early 2000s, we have this throwback thing where everybody's wearing throwbacks.
Right.
So then all of a sudden, I want to rock a throwback Charlie Ward jersey. Do you get a percentage of that right now? Just as the way the construct is right now, do you get a cut of that?
Not unless it's tied to something.
Right. And see, that's what I think is unfair.
Throwback looks like, or who is with. If it's tied to the school, then yes, the school. I've done some deals with the school on some of the royalty checks, as far as them using my name, image, and likeness for some of the things that they've done that they've actually sold. And so I've done some of those things. Not a lot, but some. But I do believe. Now, I don't think it's a big, I would say a big issue, but I think it's something that this happens in the league as a whole. And I may be wrong, but when we talk about Kobe Bryant, we talk about LeBron James. If they make, let's just say that I'm just throwing this number out. If they make 2% off of all the things that they sell, they still going to make a lot. But however, if you get a guy like, just someone who just came in, and they may not be at LeBron's level, but they still can make and generate enough, and they all get 2%. His is going to be a little less, but it's still everyone gets the same
amount. Like Andre Drummond. Just picking out a lake.
I mean, if his jersey sell, I mean, his jersey, he may get 5 jersey sales as opposed to LeBron getting $1 million. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to get 2%.
So that brings me to this question. Should you attend as a young college athlete coming in or freshman coming in, should you be attending or transferring to a school where you can be the most profitable?
Yeah.
I mean,
as to the choices, because now they're doing it to talking about the NFL. They're talking about TV exposure.
Yeah, that's marketability.
All those types of things, they're doing it today. I think that's just another feather in the cap.
Does that shrink the pool? Or does it widen the pool? Because the catch 22 of that is this. I can go to a quote unquote smaller school, and that insulated fan base. I'll give you a perfect example of that. When we were in college, Marshall was a Division
I/IIA.
Right.
Yep.
But the fan base was rabid. Like, they loved that school. And them games sold out every week. Those jersey sales were ridiculous. And I remember Randy Moss being there, and he was killing the game. Like, he was the most popular person in the state of West Virginia by far, and probably still is to this day. And Randy Moss jerseys from Marshall would probably still sell at a high clip to this day. So
I say, yeah, an 84 green Moss jersey, I would imagine.
So his going to a smaller situation could still generate millions of dollars, cause or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? It's even though it's not Texas or Alabama or something like that, it's still a really good financial situation.
It's the small town model.
Right, exactly.
As we've seen in high school football, where everything shuts down on a Friday night in that hometown during home mm-hmm. games. And so when you have that support, I mean, let's just put it out there. Now, since we're going, you know, with NIL and transfer and all that, what's the deal with boosters giving people money now?
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a really strong point right there, because that's where the game, the playing field could level tremendously. Because that knocks, to me, that kind of levels all of that out. Because if I'm going to get money anyway, then I'm definitely going to play the game above board. Because I have too much to lose with you doing something under the table. Because you've already given me like liberty to make money, which was the problem.
I'm gonna tell you now, and this is very enticing. These autograph signings, everything is not above board.
Right.
That's true.
Everything's not above board. And
yeah.
If you get caught up in a situation, cash deals and all that kind of stuff, that's what happened, you know, during the early 90s, you know, they start catching these guys with these cash deals for mm-hmm. signing autographs and what have you, and the IRS came after them and all that back, you know, all that kind of stuff. Man, you start now you're starting putting kids who are 18, 19, who's still trying to figure out how to decipher through, you know, what type of clothes they're going to wear. Now they're having to make these big time decisions when people are giving them big time money underneath the table, you know, in cash.
So do you think this will nip that in the bud, where the NCAA should put a standard for that? Like, if you're doing an autograph sessions, this is the standard by which you have to function. No autograph can be more than that kind of thing.
I think you have to put some standards in, some rules and regulations. I know people don't like that word, but put some guidelines in to where you can only make so much. However, it has to be in a certain setting.
Make so much or charge so much?
Well, I mean, you can charge whatever.
That'll go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm saying if 500 people or 1,000 people or 2,000 people show up, do I cut it off because I can only make so much? Or you see what I'm saying? Or
that's where you get into it. That's where you get into the percentage.
Okay.
You're gonna make so much of a percentage.
Gotcha.
And then any autograph signing has to be under school regulated place.
I was gonna say, because even that gets tricky, because if you say if you don't put that rule in place and I go to Joe's card shop and Joe is charging $10,000 or, you know, $5,000 per autograph, or tearing that out, you get an autograph and a picture for $5. You get an autograph, picture, and a text message for whatever. You know, I'm just throwing out stuff.
That's why I think the NCAA and the school has to get involved as far as regulating where you can do stuff. Because then you do get into the shady stuff of, you know,
but I'm
whatever
saying,
whatever pawn shop. What's the crazy pawn shop around here that, you know, if they you know what I'm talking about, the crazy commercials they show.
Listen, but exactly what you're talking about.
But if like Lil Jon, if they decide they want to, you know, be shady, that's when the NCAA comes in and is like, okay, you can. There has to be regulations to where the company itself has to meet this certain standard to be able to host an autograph session for a player. You know what I'm saying?
They have to come to they have to come to the university to regulate, make it a regulation for the student athlete, if that's what they want to do.
We all cover the ACC. How do you think all of this with the transfer, with the NIL, how does the, and with Georgia specific rules as it relates to Georgia Tech, how does this all affect the ACC? Good, bad? Are you guys here for the student athlete empowerment?
Good and bad. I'm not sure about that part. I think the transfers, I just sent an article to my team about, you know, the transfers. I was looking at all the transfers that they have in basketball.
It's unbelievable.
It was just the top 100. Let me just say that. And it was the gamut. And what I mean by that is they weren't just graduate seniors. They were freshmen. They were sophomores. They were juniors. It was all the years. And then there was
Tennessee's leading tackler went to Alabama.
Yes. Yeah. And it is not just the guy. It's not just the guys who are disgruntled about playing time either. I mean, like as Tutu, the man left Tennessee and went to Alabama. I mean, that's like right down the street.
And by the way, he didn't leave Tennessee to go to Alabama to sit on the bench.
So for more playing time, because if he's the leading tackler, he's obviously getting playing time.
I'm saying he, but you know Alabama stockpiles. But but Nick Saban didn't say, hey, yeah, come on over here. We got something for you. He's not gonna be the third guy off the bench. He's got a legit shot to go be the lead tackler of Alabama. But you gotta wonder, was that conversation had a long time ago?
Well, I'm not here. I mean, it happened.
Well, I'm just saying.
This is where it's getting to, though.
This is where it's getting to.
Schools cherry-picking, talking to whomever it is, maybe not the student athlete, but someone in his family or his circle about these opportunities, or the circle is reaching out to these schools about, you know, the student athlete. And now you're starting to get these interconference teams swapping players and all that kind of carrying on. And it's going to get to a point where I think you're going to start seeing more coaches going after other coaches.
That's where it's going to get ugly.
I think so.
Because now I think the $100 handshake that, you know, you see associate with high school recruiting, that's going to go to transfer portal recruiting, for lack of a better term. I mean,
I've said this before on this show. I'll say it again. If I am a coach that's trying to rebuild my program, I am using the Scott Drew model. Why would I waste my time on an 18-year-old when I can go and get a 20-year-old who is
you can go get a 2 or 3 year veteran.
Oh, man. Why am I wasting my time in some crappy high school gym when I can go to the transfer portal and get exactly what I need that's tested and proven?
I think that's a portion of a team, because when you have to do that each and every year, bringing in new thought processes from a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to get, you know, find the right person coming from, you know, the right culture and all of that. But sometimes you still have to shape them. And I'm not saying that you can't do that with high school kids, but high school kids, you're coming in and you get a chance to groom them for however long years. And even today with the transfer portal, you're getting kids leaving after 1 year, freshman year, so you can have them for 2 to 3 years or whatever, how long they want to stay. But I did see a kid who was at Georgetown. I think he was the point guard at one point. Akinjo.
He's in the transfer portal?
He's in the transfer portal.
Okay.
He started.
McClung is in there again.
Who?
McClung?
Yes, he's another one. He started Trent. He started Georgetown, left Georgetown, went to where did he go? Arizona.
Texas Tech.
No, well, McClung went to Texas Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
This Akinju kid went to Arizona, and now he's in the portal again. And both of them actually was on the same team. Akinju and McClung were on the same team, and they both left at some point from Georgetown, and now they're on their third team. And so I'm just curious to know, and I would love to hear, you know, or see some statistics on how many of these kids keep going from keep switching from school to school. Now they can only do it one time, but you know, how many of them did this in high school?
Right.
Yeah.
AAU team.
Oh, I would venture to say a lot. The answer to that question is a lot.
I'll give McClung a slight pass on that just because both situations he went to, the coach left. Coach left Georgetown, coach left Texas Tech.
And in that case, I don't mind it as much. If I'm being honest, I don't mind it. If I went to a school because of a coach and that coach said, oh, I got a better job somewhere else, okay.
I'm surprised that kid didn't just go pro.
I think he came in with Pat.
Did he come in?
I think he came in with Pat. But him and Akinjo.
Who is Pat?
Ewing.
Patrick Ewing.
Ewing.
No. Did Charlie just say Pat? Like everybody
knew who he was talking about.
No.
I knew who he was talking about. I don't think you need the button. I'm defending Charlie on that one. I don't think you need the button. Because I knew who he was talking about because we were already talking about
Kendrick. I knew who he was talking about too, but Kendrick, that was a humble flex moment. We call him Patrick Ewing.
What you already called him?
I'm with Charlie. I'm defending Charlie on this one. I'm defending Charlie on this one.
I'm going to let you live on this one. I'm going to let you live.
Came in with Coach Ewing. My bad. I ain't mean to call the man by his first name.
Listen.
Okay, now you can hit it.
And that was a Charlie Ward humble flex. That's all I'm saying.
What?
You called a man Pat.
That is what I called a man.
That's your homie. That's your boy.
Yes. It is. It's the truth. What are you talking
about? I just wanted to make sure all of our listeners. Listen, we've been averaging around somewhere around 8,000 to 9,000 people listening. So I need them to know who Pat is. I don't want there to be any confusion about who Pat is.
Cool. Coach Patrick Ewing.
There you go. There you go. I wanted to make that clear to our listeners.
I knew he was talking about initially.
Oh, I knew he was. But then,
but then when I'm just calling him by his first name. Yeah, you had to get it.
Right.
That's right up there with Al.
It's nice to see that you guys are close, that you're all on a first name basis. I will say that, though.
Yeah, we had some time together.
I love it. All things can be equal. There's good and bad in all of this, but I do like one fundamental thing that has taken place in that finally it appears we're headed towards something that looks like something going to these players for what they're doing. And we're not going to just blindly say, oh, this is amateur sports. No, we know it's not amateur sports. There's nothing amateur about
it. The only country that does that, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Let's stop calling a multi-billion-dollar operation amateur. It's not amateur. So let's be honest about that part of it. And then let's build from there. Now, maybe, you know, I love
what NCAA still being a nonprofit is amazing.
That is unbelievable to me. That is the most unbelievable part of the whole thing. They call that technically it's a 501c3.
But remember, that's one part of it. There is a profit. Somebody's making a profit.
Somebody's making a lot of profit.
That's why I was saying the fact that they're still considered a nonprofit is amazing.
Yeah. what do you guys? Well, that was a good discussion. I really appreciate that. I wanted to ask a couple of quick non-ACC questions of the week,
or none, as the graphic says.
None ACC questions. I don't know how we got none.
You know, as a broadcast professional, I'm not supposed to point out that stuff, but
you're not. You know better, but it's fine.
I misspelled a graphic over the weekend, so whatever.
Depending on what time of the night I do these graphics, strong possibility I'm going to screw it up. Very strong possibility. I want to give some love to our girl, Angel McCautry. Heartbreaking. I got to tell you, my heart dropped to hear that tear she got the other night was a – because I didn't think it was that at first. But man, to hear that was an ACL tear and that her season is over was kind of heartbreaking. Cause to me, they got a legit shot to win the thing. And they still have a legit shot to win the thing.
They still have a legit shot.
But
I hate it because Angel's one of the nicer people you'll ever meet.
She's wonderful.
She's awesome. And like I used to pick on her when she was at U of L because whenever we would go to practice, she would try to dunk in practice. And I don't think she ever made one. So I used to call her Dr. Layupstein. And I'm like, I'm not dispersing her because I used to tell her that. And she would laugh at me. But Angel's one of the nicer people you'll meet. She's one of the most talented basketball players I've ever seen, male or female. And see her at this stage in her career, especially. They have to go through an ACL. You wonder how many years does she have, you know, left? Because I mean, Angel's over 30 at this point.
Yeah.
And so,
well, that you was wonder, my first. That was my first non-ACC question of the week. She can bounce back from this?
I hope she does. And Angel's got a ton of other stuff professionally off the court that she's got going on in her life that she's going to be fine. So you wonder if she will come back. I'd love to see her come back. I love watching Angel play, but you just wonder if she will come back, especially at her age and, you know, just work. I mean, honestly, where she is in life, she doesn't really need basketball.
No, not at all. She's doing quite well. She's doing quite well. But with having said that, it's a tough injury. It's a tough situation. I wish her all the best, and she's in my thoughts and prayers. My other non-ACC question, Kendrick, what did you do to that horse, Medina Spirit?
Looked at it.
Because Medina Spirit is out here. They're saying that the horse is doping.
Take you behind the scenes.
Take me behind the scenes.
I didn't even see that horse until the week of Derby. I don't think Medina Spirit even got to Louisville until the week of Derby. And I actually got video of it on accident because I was like, what is that? Who is that horse? And they said, it's Medina Spirit. I was like, who is that? And
oh, my.
Baffert's horse. And I was like, oh. And if you watch Bob Baffert's interviews after that race, Bob Baffert didn't even think he was going to win that race. And so, I don't know. He's adamant that the horse has never even taken the drug that it tested positive for betamethasone, something like that.
Did you hear the excuse he floated out there?
He's floating all kind of stuff out there. Which I'm like,
excuse
that the cancel culture thing.
No. This was one where if I read the tweet correctly. He said one of the, not trainers or I guess handlers of the horse, urinated on some hay that the horse ate. And that's where the test is coming from.
See, he's coming up with too much stuff that now I'm questioning. If he just stuck with one thing.
I'm like, what?
Somebody else quote, because I know these Twitters and all this kind of stuff can get messy, man. I'm still just trying to figure out when did this test happen? You know,
the test happened right after the race, but it takes a week for it to come back. So that's why they found out late Saturday night.
Okay, because you know me, I'm always just leery when there's a lot of money involved and people are in charge that I know this normally don't happen, but people in charge and then you just get into the political piece if they don't like the man who won or the horse, you know, whatever the case may be, some fishing stuff start coming up.
Well, they don't like the man who won.
Apparently not.
They do. Well, they do and they don't. Well, the thing with Baffert, just on our side of it, Baffert is, you ask just about anybody that covers horse racing in this area, we all love Bob because he's accessible. I mean, I can get a hold of Bob, you know, and I did a Zoom with Bob over the summer, and, you know, and part of that is because his wife used to be an anchor in this market that we all knew. So we all love Bob. Bob's great to us.
The media loves Bob.
The media loves him. I don't know because horse racing is such a weird sport. This is a sport that's a bunch of rich people who don't care about growing the sport because they do. And it's a thing that we complain about all the time when it comes to the Derby. It's like, you know, a lot of this stuff would be easy if y'all had regular availabilities instead of us just running around from barn to barn hoping somebody talks.
Right.
But
that is
my I can't really specifically say if the horse racing community is a big fan of Bob's or not.
But I would think they love Bob Baffert the same way.
They need to.
Well, hold on. I think they love him the same way NFL owners love Robert Kraft. Maybe not so much. Like, you tolerate him because he's a part of your sport and he makes your sport bigger.
I won't even say Robert Kraft. I'd say Jerry Jones.
I would say Robert Kraft because he wins.
Right,
it's
but the thing is, the difference is, it doesn't matter if Dallas wins. That's what they hate Jerry Jones for. It's because they don't win.
they're probably on even playing field if we think about it, because it gets annoying to have to always kowtow in some respect to this one guy. And that's the same. You're right with Jerry Jones. You're kowtowing to the. The mystique that is the Dallas Cowboys. They haven't won a Super Bowl in all these years, yet they're the number one franchise in the world.
Oh, from the cup.
Don't do that. Don't be that guy. don't be that guy.
So back. I'm going to put on my Deion jersey.
And if you do, you get the button. You will absolutely get the button. Go ahead, Charlie.
So this drug. Is it a common drug in the horse racing deal? Because I read it, and it said it was like an anti-inflammatory.
It's an anti-inflammatory. And the funny thing is, horse racing is weird with all these weird rules, because I did it last night. So if he does happen to get disqualified, it'll be only the third time in the history of the Derby that the winner has been disqualified. The second one was a couple of years ago, and then the first one.
And he didn't win, right?
Which one? A couple of years ago?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, he won, but he like cut somebody off.
Which that was a ridiculous, but you know.
But whatever. The other one, and I actually, only reason why I even really read up on it a little bit yesterday is because somebody called and told me, shout out to Steve Crump. Was Dancer's Image in 1968.
Okay.
He was disqualified for an anti-inflammatory. So it'd only be the second time that a horse has been disqualified for an illegal drug. I mean, a failed drug test, just to make it simple.
Okay, go ahead.
At the time, somebody associated with the horse. This is May, first Saturday, May in 1968, which is not long after Martin Luther King was assassinated. Apparently somebody associated with the horse made some kind of comment about the government. And so the people about MLK's assassination. And so the people associated with the horse thought that somebody.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Somebody contaminated the horse because of that. And so it took 5 years before he was officially disqualified.
Wow.
So has other, because you, you can't tell me. I mean, this, you can't tell me that no other winner at any at the Derby. Let's just say the Derby. You can't tell me that another horse hasn't tested or has some form of anti-inflammatory in their system throughout all these years.
What it was is like, because like in 1968, they when it first happened, they wanted to cover it up. They wanted to sweep it under the rug, but they didn't. What it is, another one in 1968, it was a drug that they could use on up until the day of the race. They couldn't have, it may even been the week of the race. It's one of the two. And so that's what it was. They could use it on up until it's race time, because apparently the drug in 68, and I think similar to the drug last week, was that it covers up pain, it masks pain. And so like if you got a sore thigh and you limping from it, well, you know, if you don't feel the pain, you run. So that's,
but if that's the case, then I mean, let's go and take the Lakers championship from last year. I'm sure they had some dudes on some anti-inflammatories and playing. I mean, that's what people.
I guess it's different with horses, the way they react to it. I guess. I mean,
so
just what it is. That's just what I've read up on.
I guess this reaction helped them win.
Well, it feels like horse racing needs and wants their horses inflamed. So that's what we're saying, that Bob, you can't uninflame your horse.
I can't believe that like the horse had a sore thigh all week and like all of a sudden he didn't feel that sore thigh and won
the Kentucky Derby. Miraculously. I mean, it's insane. The whole thing's insane. But again,
I'm just saying, it happens every Saturday on the football game. A guy has a shoulder injury. Next thing you know, he can't hold up his shoulder and all of that, and then he goes into the locker room every Sunday. This happens at some point as well. The guy can't move. Let's take the championship game. I mean, the Clemson versus Ohio State.
Yeah.
Justin Fields gets hurt in the first part of the game. He bites his lip every single time he throws a football or whatever the first half, and then the second half he comes out, he's cool.
He's Superman.
You can't tell me, man, they're shooting people up all the time.
No, Charlie. What he did is that through much fasting and prayer at halftime, he was able to open. Well, okay.
Jesus, if Jesus walked in that, he can do it.
He can do it. I'm just saying. Although I feel like Ohio State probably used anti-inflammatory. So this is where
the anti-inflammatories might be different in humans than they are in horses. I mean.
Maybe that's what it is. It's really a fascinating set of circumstances. Okay, our last non-AC question of the week. I got to throw this in, because it was just fascinating to me. Because I've heard Twitter has gone crazy all day, all afternoon long at the signing of Tim Tebow.
Before you start,
go ahead.
Could you please tell the people to stop hating on my man?
Hating on Tim Tebow?
Yes.
I don't know if I can tell them that, Charlie, because they hate me.
Please tell them to stop hating on my man, Tim Tebow. The man is blessed and highly favored by the Lord.
By the Lord.
By the Lord.
By the Lord. You have Gilligan. Get off the island.
they can't stop. They cannot stop that man from doing the things that God has.
All I'm going to say is this. He clearly is, because there is no one in the history of sports that has gotten more opportunities to do more different things than Tim Tebow.
He had Joshua, like the Battle of Jericho.
Yeah.
Just like anybody else, man, it's all about relationships.
My uh-huh. one of the hosts of the other shows, Unc Noise, Shake, he texted me the moment it happened. He said, I can't repeat everything he said in that text. But he said to me, how does this happen? I said, it happens because he got brought in by the one coach. Who would give him a shot that just happened to be his college coach.
So let's just say, let's look at this then. Kyler Murray, does he go number one to the Phoenix Cardinals if what's the coach there?
Cliff Kingsbury.
If Cliff Kingsbury is not there, he doesn't go number one.
I agree, 100%.
And that's
nepotism is not dead.
That is no different than this whole situation with Tebow.
How about
what's going down episode of That's My Mama?
How about this? How about the reason why the one kid went to Jamar Chase? Was it Jamar Chase that went to
Cincinnati?
The Bengals
is because his college quarterback. Listen, nepotism is not dead, people. It's not dead. A nepotism is alive and well.
Even if you're almost 40 and you play in a position you never played. He had Gilligan. Get off the island.
Now, I mean, the thing that I heard, I think it was, I forgot who it was talking about, I was on Colin Cowherd, was talking about, you know, the fanatics, the Tim Tebow fanatics and all of that coming mm-hmm. out of Trevor Lawrence struggles and all of that. I think, you know, Tim gets a bad rap because of what other people think. Yeah. I don't think that's his whole mentality, his attitude. He never says any of that stuff. And yes, that's the outside world. And when we start listening to the outside world to make decisions on the inside, then something wrong with us. You know, the pressure. I understand all the pressure and all that kind of stuff. But Tim, I do believe, you know, if he gets an opportunity, he'll be an asset because he can play some special teams as well. He'll play tight end. And then if you need a guy to throw the football, he can throw the football as well. What about my man in
There's a guard somewhere.
I'll give you another example. Terrace Marshall is in Carolina right now because who was his offensive coordinator? The offensive coordinator that's in Carolina right now. That's how the game is played, man.
But just think,
Tim's a nice guy. Actually, I met him last summer, two summers ago, because when he was piddling around in the minor leagues and the Syracuse Chiefs were playing the Bats.
They gave
us access to him. He's a nice guy. I appreciate how hard he works. But the opportunities he gets,
amazing. Listen, Haskins, the Blacks have come for him today. They have come for him today, Charlie Ward. The Blacks, they are upset.
Who?
They're saying, how does Tim Tebow get an opportunity?
The Blacks.
they are upset, Charlie Ward, because they're saying, how does he get an opportunity and Colin Kaepernick can't get an opportunity?
What has he done? The man ain't. I don't understand it. I don't understand that comparison. But
that's
I get it.
Besides black and white, that bothers me a lot as well. Because a lot of times some things aren't black and white. It's relationships. It's relationships, regardless of how you try to shape it.
Right. Because if it wasn't, I get it.
And let's just say someone wanted to buck the system, like a Jerry Jones. Mm-hmm. He's probably, I mean, someone will have to take Colin Kaepernick like a Jerry Jones, someone who really didn't care about what outside people would say.
Jerry ain't going to do that in Texas if Jerry on the team.
Someone like him.
He on the Raiders. It had to be John Gruden.
I mean, yes, it could be some. I'm just saying someone who doesn't really care about what
that repercussion looks like.
And what it looks like.
Yeah.
So that is the reason why, yes, some of those teams brought him in for an tryout when it was unpopular. And so I just think sometimes it's not about – sometimes it is about black and white, and sometimes it's about relationships.
I honestly think this is as simple as – this guy led me to a national championship. He's an all-around football player. I still believe in him, and he understands the culture I'm trying to create.
So is he going to give Percy Harvin that same intro?
To be continued.
I think Percy Harvin has eliminated himself because of concussions and headaches and migraines, hip surgeries and all of that.
But Charlie, I feel better. I've had some time off, and I haven't had a migraine in 18 months, especially since COVID. I'm good. I'm ready to get back out on the football field.
Y'all, this black and white thing, man. It is not.
We're just asking questions, Charlie. We just asked.
I give it to you, Charlie. In this instance, it was more about relationships, but I can also see where people are coming from.
I can like, see how's this dude
getting an opportunity with Colin Kaepernick tonight?
I can see it too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this. Because of relationships that I may have with people in the NBA, if I decided to go and not be a head coach, but just be a coach, I probably could.
Right.
Just because of
relationships.
Right.
I'm a high school coach.
Yeah.
And that normally doesn't happen. You know, and it happens Deion.
Yeah, Deion can go coach on any level he wants.
Exactly.
That's real.
Now that he has
head coach though.
I think so.
I mean, Florida State had a coaching vacancy when they got rid of Willie. And that wasn't that long. It was just 2 years ago. I'm sure Deion was interested in. He ain't walking into there.
They weren't going to bring. He wasn't ready for that situation. Even though he probably would have done, you know, he'd have gotten better, done a very good job eventually, just because of the people he knows and his charisma and all those types of things, he would have done really well. But they weren't going to take that chance after they just had two coaches
back to back.
They wanted to find someone that had an established, and establish a program and all those types of things. So, but give him a few years and he does well where he is. I mean, there's going to be some people probably calling him up to say, hey, or not call him up, but when that opportunity comes, they're going to give
him. I think he'll get calls this season, this offseason.
He will, but I don't think he'll take him this offseason because I think he wants to prove his point.
Well, all he's done for HBCUs already, getting that Pepsi deal and all that stuff.
Oh, man. He's already making an impact. Yeah. He's making an impact. This has been fun. This has been a lot of fun tonight.
Hey, guess what?
Will you give a shout out?
Yeah, I got two things.
Hold on. Wait a minute, Charlie. Wait just a second. All right, go.
Two things. This NIL is going to end up in court, so a lot of lawyers and people are going to make money. All right? That's one.
Okay.
Two, shout out to our latest Seminoles for winning their quarterfinal game to head to get invited to the College Cup, which is the semifinals. And they're playing Virginia? I think they're playing.
Yes.
Going in ACC again. But they beat Duke 5-3 in penalty kicks.
Shout out to the whole ACC. We dominating this Final Four. Because it's Florida State. What is it? Florida State, Virginia, and North Carolina?
I'm sure.
And I think there's only – and Santa Clara's the only other team. We killed it up here.
And then the last shout out for Florida State was we took two out of three from the Notre Dame-ers.
Charlie, did you pay attention to any other ACC team other than Florida State?
They just won. I'm just saying, man. Shout out, they won this weekend, so I want to give them a shout out. The ladies happened in,
Charlie, Louisville won this weekend too. I didn't hear you giving them a shout out.
Yeah. I know Louisville is second in Atlantic. Notre Dame is number one, And Florida State took 2 out of 3 from them this weekend. I'm just trying to help.
I have no words, Charlie. I have no words. I have no more words.
Become a host for one of these regionals.
Well, they're moving on the right track. They're moving on the right track. Charlie Ward is the greatest on the planet.
Fantastic.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's why he is our brother. We love it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our time. We went a little longer than we normally do, but I know you appreciate it because it's a great conversation. And I like asking the tough questions sometimes too. So that makes it really interesting. And I think listen, the NCAA is different. It's just different now. And I think we can never go back now. This is where we are. Yeah, this is where we are. This is who we are. And guess what? As Charlie said, it's about that you get more interested because some of this is going to be challenged in court. So stay tuned. That's Charlie Ward. That's Kendrick Haskins. We'll be back on Wednesday to do it all over again. Believe in the ACC. We out of here.